I'm Shanna Hutchison, dietitian, blogger, and mama, born and raised in the heart of the Midwest. I believe that wellness goes way beyond what we eat and that our body size does not determine our worth. I am passionate about showing other women how to live a life they truly love, one that feels purposeful, that helps them feel their best physically, mentally, and emotionally, and that being a mom can be one of the best things you ever do without it becoming your entire identity. This is a place you can come to hear vulnerable and interesting conversations about health and wellness, motherhood, entrepreneurship, and more. If you want to find freedom with food, learn how to improve your overall well-being, and stop waiting for a number on the scale to start living your best life and go after your goals, then you're in the right place. I'm so excited to learn and grow together. This is the Wellness for the Win podcast. Hello and welcome to the Wellness for the Win podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Hutchison, and I'm so happy to have you here. I appreciate you tuning in. If you are expecting your first or second or even third baby and beyond, I think you're going to love today's interview. I had a chance to sit down with Dr. Kate Hartman from Shawnee Mission Pediatrics, who actually happens to be our pediatrician for Rhett and our soon-to-be second baby. And we tackled so many of my listeners' questions regarding newborn babies, how to prepare our toddlers for the transition to welcoming a new baby, and refreshers on things like newborn safety and sleep and feedings and weight gain and so much more. So I just love Dr. Hartman's approach and perspective. She's super realistic and compassionate towards moms and families, and just truly encourages us to give ourselves grace as we navigate parenthood because it's not easy and there's no one right way to do it. So I think you're going to love this one. Let's go ahead and meet Dr. Hartman and dive into these topics.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kate Hartman. I am a pediatrician at Shawnee Mission Pediatrics. I have been in practice for about 20 years. I am the mom of three. I have identical twin girls that are almost 20 and sophomores in college. And I have a son who's a sophomore in high school. I am from Kansas City and really never thought I'd be back here, but am loving having a private practice where I grew up.
Awesome. I love it. Perfect. Yeah. Well, we're just going to dive into some questions. I collected some questions from my community and got a ton. So there's definitely a lot of interest and a lot of need in this area and people who are expecting either their first baby or their second baby or their third. As you probably know, all kids are different, right? So we are always going to have questions and, you know, different questions will come up along the way. So first off, you know, just kind of starting with the basics, a lot of people were wondering, when should we try to establish a pediatrician in the first place during pregnancy, whether it's your first baby or if you just moved somewhere and you need to find a new physician? When do you typically recommend doing that?
I would say that most women or families come in to meet me somewhere in that third trimester. I think a lot of it depends on how many different pediatricians they're going to interview, making sure that they have time to get those interviews in before they're going to deliver. I do think sometime in that third trimester is usually the best time.
Sure, totally. And with that said too, you know, several people did ask, what should I even be asking if I'm interviewing a pediatrician? You know, what should I be looking for? How do we kind of determine if it's a good fit? Are there any specific things that you try to cover if you're meeting a family for the first time, or what does that kind of look like?
When I'm meeting a family for the first time, I really want to make sure that they feel comfortable asking questions. For me, that's the most important thing about spending time with a family, is that they feel comfortable asking me their questions and that we get all their questions answered before they leave. You know, I may ramble on about something that they really don't care about. I want my family to feel comfortable to interrupt me, steer me in a different direction, because the most important thing for me is that I cover all of their questions. Right. So I think that one of the most important things in finding a pediatrician is just feeling like you can talk to that person, that that person will relate to you, that they'll answer your questions, that you feel comfortable asking your questions and all of those kind of things. So, you know, just making sure that it's somebody that you feel comfortable talking to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so important. And just making sure, you know, you feel like it's a someone who has good bedside manner that you feel, yeah, totally comfortable with. And I think you do an amazing job of that. So I can attest to that as you are our pediatrician. Okay. So this is kind of selfish for us expecting our second, but I also, like I said, I have a lot of moms in my community who are also expecting their second or maybe third child and wondering, you know, what are some of the best ways to prepare our toddler for a new baby coming in because it's about to rock my son's world that he's not going to be the only one. So, you know, obviously we're trying to talk about it very often. We're talking about baby brother and taking him to the baby's nursery and all those things. But what are some of your other best tips for preparing our little ones for the new one to arrive?
One of my best tips, I think, for preparing a new sibling is to remember that the baby doesn't know who's coming to visit it. The baby is not seeking out that attention. So really kind of coach anybody who's coming to visit to meet the baby to make over big brother. Yes. Oh my gosh, Rhett, how are you? It's so good to see you. What have you been up to? I hear you're a big brother. Oh my gosh, will you introduce me to the new baby? Making sure that everybody focuses the attention on the big sibling first.
Yeah.
And really make them a part of this introduction of the new baby to the family, making him a part of all of that. At home, making him a helper, you know, remembering that, gosh, the baby can get into a lot less trouble, danger in a few minutes. They can cry a little bit. I'm going to attend to his needs sometimes first.
Yeah.
Just to show him that, hey, you're still really important.
Right.
Because the baby doesn't know. And that's actually something that you really see in birth order, right? Second kids tend to be better self-soothers because they have to be, right? Your two-year-old can get into a lot of danger in a short period of time. They love to do it right as you start to nurse or right as you start to with the new baby. So just remembering that, gosh, I can set the baby down and make sure that he feels his needs are taken care of.
Yeah. Gosh, those are very, very good reminders. Yeah. Just telling our families, yes, please shower Rhett with all the attention before you, you know, obsess over the baby. That's a good reminder for all of us for sure.
And just making sure that, you know, that he's a part of that introduction, that he, you know, he's going to love getting to introduce grandma and grandpa to the new baby and things like that. And that really will make him feel special and a part of that transition.
Absolutely. Yes. I love that. Awesome. I got a few questions and this is interesting. I got a lot of feedback from moms in my community on this question, but I'm excited to hear your thoughts. Someone asked, do you recommend keeping the toddler out of daycare? If there's someone who goes to daycare for, you know, either part-time or full-time, do you recommend keeping them home for any period of time when the newborn arrives and why or why not?
I think that's really family dependent.
Yeah.
And even child dependent, right? You know, I think that there's really some benefit to some degree to keeping a toddler on their schedule.
Yeah.
Right. So keeping, you know, this is their routine. This is what they're used to. Toddlers thrive on routine. So continuing taking them to daycare, keeping them on the regular team can really help set expectations for them. It also provides that opportunity for mom to bond with new baby, to have that special time one-on-one where you're not feeling guilty that you're just setting your toddler in front of TV or because when your toddler's home with you with a new baby, depending, I mean, you may not be able to get out and go to the park. You may not be able to get out and do all the fun things and kind of being trapped inside with your toddler where you don't have a lot of leeway for activities makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, you know, obviously new parents worry about germs, things like that. You know, some families can't afford to have a kid in daycare and be home off that maternity leave. I mean, it really, I think we really just depends on that family situation.
Sure.
Sometimes it's nice too to have a couple days with the whole family home to get used to it. So the toddler doesn't feel like, oh, you've got this new baby and you're shipping me off someplace else.
Right.
So, and sometimes it's a melding of both of them, having a couple days at home, still having a couple days where you send them just to keep them in that routine and keep them busy.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what a lot of people said was, you know, keeping the toddler in their routine is ideal and, you know, they're used to that. It's good for them. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited to have that solo time with baby that I had with Rhett. You know, I feel like I would be, you know, we would both me and the new baby would be robbed of that if Rhett was home. And yes, I would feel a lot of guilt being like, okay, let's watch 100 movies a day because I can't do both. But yes, definitely so many different unique factors to take into account for each individual family. So I appreciate you kind of pointing some of those out too. And like you mentioned, that brings me to my next question, which is germs. That is, I think, the biggest fear for people is, okay, if our older kid does continue to go to daycare, how can we minimize that exposure to all the germs? Is it even possible to keep them away from the germs? This is a fear that I've definitely had because I, you know, thinking back on the first year, I know Rhett had so many illnesses, which is just, you know, it's normal, but we didn't even have an older toddler bringing stuff in. So it's like, oh my gosh, what is it going to look like this time? So any tips for how to minimize that germ exposure from that older kiddo?
I think hand washing is probably one of your best, you know, when I brought my third child home, just making sure that there's hand sanitizer readily available, just kind of all over in strategic places. Mm-hmm. Hand washing is probably one of the best ways to minimize exposures. And then I think I love to teach toddlers that babies love to be kissed on their toes.
Yeah.
That's their favorite spot. So if you want to give a baby a kiss, let's kiss their toes.
Yeah.
Trying to keep them just out of being in the baby's face. Mm-hmm. It's not always possible. It's going to happen.
Right.
Trying to stress out about it as little as possible, because I think you can truly drive yourself crazy. But I think that those are probably the best ways. It's really just hand washing. And then I love to teach toddlers that babies love their toes kissed.
Yeah.
Not their, their toes.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yes. Definitely will be a challenge at times, I'm sure. But that's a good trick.
Taking a quick break to share a message from one of my sponsors, Advent Health Kansas City. I'm so proud to be partnering with Advent Health again during this pregnancy, and I wanted to share about one of their new offerings in the Kansas City area if you're a local listener. Advent Health now has a birth center in their new South Overland Park Hospital, serving the community of growing families in southeastern Johnson County. This new birth center is fully equipped with state-of-the-art labor, delivery, and postpartum rooms, keeping mom and baby in the same room for their entire hospital stay. They also have a level 2 NICU staffed with Children's Mercy providers for sick and premature infants, gestational ages 32 weeks or older. In addition, they have nurse maternity navigators available to help you develop a birth plan that's unique to you and the experience that you hope to have with your labor and delivery. You can call 913-373-6160 to schedule a tour of the new birth center at the Advent Health South Overland Park Hospital, or head to adventhealthkc.com/SOP birth center if you're interested. I'll leave more information for you in the show notes. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
What are some of the most common challenges that you see second-time parents face? Because I think it's such a unique thing, because it's like, in a way, we feel like we know what we're doing. You know, we've done this before. We have all this experience. But again, everyone says all babies are different. So maybe we'll be thrown for a loop because certain things that worked with Rhett didn't work with this baby. So, you know, what do you see second-time parents face in terms of challenges and how to, you know, kind of combat those or navigate through them?
So yeah, you're exactly right. I think that every baby's different. And so I think second-time parents get frustrated when, gosh, the second baby's not as good of a sleeper as our first baby was, or they're not meeting some of the milestones at the exact time as you look back and that your first baby did.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing I see moms experience is just, you know, feelings of being a little bit overwhelmed, being guilty, feeling like they can't do it all. Right.
Yeah.
How do I give my toddler the attention they need and my newborn the attention they need?
Right.
And I think a lot of parents will feel guilty feeling like, oh my gosh, I don't hold this new baby as much as I was able to hold Rhett. I don't talk to this baby as much as I was able to talk to Rhett. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of moms have a lot of guilt over that, not being able to spend as much time with the newborn as they were with their first child. And what I generally do is just remind them that actually that baby is going to grow and thrive. You know, having some alone time, learning to self-soothe isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
And that baby also gets plenty of stimulation from having a sibling around. Right.
Right.
So
totally.
While you're so guilty, it's not your 100% attention. This child's getting attention from lots of different places that Rhett didn't get.
Yeah.
So, you know, just remembering that, cutting yourself some slack, doing the best you can, right? Those are really the most important things of how to navigate it.
Yeah. That's a really good reminder. It's just thinking about, the toddler is definitely going to want to give them all kinds of attention. And that's just a unique, special thing that the first baby doesn't get. So I love that kind of mindset shift and perspective, and absolutely giving yourself so much grace, whether it is your first or your second or your third or all the things, because being a mom or being a parent in general is not an easy task. Kind of rewinding back to the newborn phase and just focusing on the baby specifically, I got a few questions on, and this, again, this is kind of selfish because I'm like, I need to
to know this too pretty soon. When is it okay to stop waking your new baby for those nighttime feedings?
I think, again, that's probably baby dependent. It depends on the size of the baby when they're born. If they're born prematurely, you're going to need to wake that baby for a longer period of time.
Right.
But this is a full-term newborn and they're doing well. I typically talk to my families about not waking their baby after that kind of last feeding of the evening, 9, 10 o'clock, once we're showing good weight gain. Mm-hmm. So almost every baby is going to lose weight and they're designed to do that. Actually, yeah. Babies are born with extra fluid on board, extra water to keep themselves hydrated while they wait for mom's milk to come in. So mm-hmm. they naturally lose weight. And then as mom's milk comes in, we start to see weight gain. And once I'm seeing babies gain weight, I typically will advise a family kind of after that last 9, 10 p.m. feeding at night, let your baby wake you that first time. Mm-hmm. Now, most newborn babies aren't going to go much longer than 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, we'll have one go longer. But that's generally what my recommendation is. Once we've got milk established, mom feels like her milk is in, baby is nursing well and gaining weight. And we follow you up pretty closely to show you that you're seeing that weight gain. And that's usually what we recommend. You can stop waking your baby at night.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember too, what is kind of the, I guess, standard in terms of like follow-up visits? Because I know baby gets seen by a pediatrician in the hospital. And then is there like a 2-day follow-up? And then what's after that? Can you remind me of that?
Sure. So yes, we will see you in the hospital within about 24 hours of the baby's birth. We're going to see the baby every day that they're in the hospital. And then after you go home, we typically follow you up within 48 hours. I would say that's when parents have the most questions.
Yeah.
Now they've been home nights.
Yeah. Right?
In the hospital, you just had a baby, the adrenaline's pumping, there's nurses, doctors, family is all around you. And then all of a sudden you take this baby home and it's like, oh God, now what?
Yeah.
So we're going to see you every 2 days or so until we've, you know, established breastfeeding. Things are going really well. We're seeing good weight gain.
So for my local listeners, especially if someone is delivering at the Advent Health Shawnee Mission Birth Center, are they always going to see their own pediatrician during their hospital stay? And what does that look like for those who have babies that end up going to the NICU?
So I think it differs from practice to practice, but in my practice, we try really hard to see our own babies in the NICU. So if you're my patient, you've chosen me to be your pediatrician. If I am in the office and working that day, I am going to be the one that comes by to see you in the hospital. I think it is such a privilege and an honor to be chosen to be such an intimate part of the start of a new family or the addition to a new family. And that starts at the birth center. And so we really like to see our own babies when they're in the hospital. Now, that being said, if I'm out of town, it's a weekend, it will be one of my partners, but it will be definitely somebody from my group. What I love about Advent Health Shawnee Mission Birth Center is that we do have a higher level NICU. We do have neonatology staff and neonatal nurse practitioners that are there around the clock. So if a baby is sick and does need to go to the NICU, we have that acute ability to transfer them up to a higher level of care. I do like to take care of babies in the NICU. I usually wait to take them over to when they're feeding and growing, they're not needing respiratory support, and they've transitioned, you know, into being a little closer to going home, but we still do like to care daily for our babies that are in the NICU as well.
Awesome. Perfect. That's good to know. So you do see them frequently in the NICU as well as just regular birth rooms as well. You see them daily, you said?
Yes.
Perfect. Awesome.
So we'll see you every day that you're in the hospital. Again, it will be, if you've chosen me to be your pediatrician, it will be me if I'm working that day. Otherwise, it will be somebody else from my group, another pediatrician.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. And then the first time I like to see babies back in the office is around a month. And I think that a month is a great time to check in with parents first, second, because at a month, most babies wake up. Mm-hmm. They're fussy. They're gassy. I have been convinced with every single one of my children that there was something seriously wrong with them or they hated me. They're not giving you a lot of reward for all that hard work. They don't look at you, smile at you yet. You're a month into sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. It's just a great time to touch base and really start, you know, working. And I do think that that's a good time to start maybe practicing a routine, starting to work on that sign. And I love to use the word practice because it works great sometimes and it doesn't others.
Yeah.
And again, giving yourself lots of grace, and it's trial and error.
Yeah. So true. So very true that it's trial and error for honestly the whole first year, it seems like, because everything's constantly changing.
100%. And, you know, part of what I tell parents all the time is that there's no one right way to do anything.
Right.
I think one of the hardest things is being a new mom or even a second time mom is wanting to do everything perfect, putting mm-hmm. so much pressure on yourself to do it right.
Yeah.
There is no way to do it right. Mm-hmm. Right. Every kiddo is different. What worked great for Rhett may not work for this baby, right? There's no one right way to get a baby to sleep, to start solid foods, to potty train. And I tell them part of my job is to help families figure out what's going to work best for them or what's going to work best with this child.
Yeah, absolutely. So important. I just appreciate your approach so much because it gives all of us permission to just be human. And humans, we're not perfect. And yes, especially when we're sleep deprived and all the things. So to tack on to that question about nighttime feedings, that kind of relates to this question on baby weights. I think especially first time parents stress about percentiles and, you know, growth charts and all these things. And we're like, you know, okay, where do they fall? Are they 50%? Are they 2%? You know, it's just like this funny thing that I think can be all consuming for some people. And I'm grateful for, you know, a couple of kind of networks I was in that helped remind me, like, don't stress about the growth charts. Just like think about, focus on your baby and how they're growing on their own kind of curve. So, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, of course, from a pediatrician perspective. Like you said, all babies do lose a little bit of weight. That's totally normal. We obviously want to see that weight gain. But what are some goals, I guess, for baby's weight in those early weeks, tips on making sure that they're maintaining a healthy weight, and just, I guess, thoughts on percentiles and growth charts and all that kind of stuff. Should we worry about them or not?
I totally agree with you. Paying attention to your own baby's growth, not necessarily percentiles and things like that. In my experience, babies that are born really large tend to lose a little bit more weight and find it a different curve. And mm-hmm. so I don't want parents to be, you know, overly concerned about that. A good goal early on for babies is around 1 ounce a day is what we're looking for as weight gain. Okay. Anywhere between 1/2 ounce to 1 ounce a day is what's considered normal. Some babies will gain a little bit less. If it's less than 1 ounce a day, I'm probably going to suggest that, do we need to supplement? Do we need, you know, is there some way to kind of increase that weight gain, whether or not that's doing some pumping, increasing breast milk supply. So we will talk a lot about those things,
sure.
But around 1 ounce a day is in the first about 4 months of life is what we consider good weight gain in a newborn. Definitely don't want parents to pay attention to height curves at this age. Mm. Getting a good, accurate height on a baby when you're trying to stick them out and mark them, you know, if your baby's at the 10th percentile for one of your visits, it doesn't mean your kiddo's going to be short as they get older.
Right.
You know, really, I don't take a lot of stock in height growth curves until they can really want to stand up nice and tall and get measured.
Totally.
And that's, depending on the kiddo, that's 3-4.
For sure.
Depending on the temperament of the child.
Yeah.
So we're really just looking at their, you know, that they're growing. But I think the biggest thing is just, you know, even if your child's in the 10th percentile, if they continue to follow that 10th percentile, that may be what their curve looks like, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Where I do get more concerned is if we're seeing consistent weight loss, mm-hmm. right? We're following the 50th percent curve, and all of a sudden one visit we're at the 30th, and then the next visit we're at the 10th, and then the next, you know, where you're really seeing that fall off.
Right.
Now, there are certain times in a baby's life where we'll see a little plateau, and then usually they'll bounce right back by that next visit. So try not to stress out about it too much if you feel like your baby's eating well and they're growing, but we follow that pretty closely early on.
For sure. Absolutely. And kind of to go along with that too, another measure of good growth and feedings and things like that would be diapers. So can you remind me what the goal is for diapers in terms of like how many wet and dirty diapers they're supposed to have, I guess, early on?
Yeah. So early on, right after they're born, my kind of rule of thumb is number of wets and dirties that they are days and age. So a lot of times that, you know, a baby will only have one wet diaper that first day, maybe two by the second day. And then really once milk is in, babies are going to have wet and dirty diapers almost every time you feed them, sometimes even in between there. So it can range from, you know, 8 to 10 to 13 to 14 wet and dirty diapers a day. Most breastfed babies are going to stool almost every time you feed them.
Yeah.
That really will slow down about a month of age. And then breastfed babies start to stool once a day, once every other day. Believe it or not, a breastfed baby, it's considered normal to stool once a week. Which is also really distressing for parents because, you know, if that were me, it'd be awful.
Right. Totally. And I definitely remember going through a phase where Rhett was pooping so much less and it was like, oh, okay, what's going on? But I mean, he was happy. He was eating normally and just kind of was a phase. And eventually he went back to more frequent, but yeah, it's always, again, everything is constantly changing and keeping you on your toes. Exactly. Absolutely. I wanted to take a quick break to talk about the prenatals that I have been taking and loving for years, including throughout my current pregnancy. All Fullwell supplements have been formulated by a registered dietitian who's passionate about women's health and wanted to create a supplement that was evidence-based, effective, and high quality. Ayla was actually on episode 8 of my podcast, and we discussed nutrition before, during, and after pregnancy. And in that episode, we also talk about the Fullwell supplements as well. They didn't cut any corners with these prenatals. Fullwell uses third-party independent testing for harmful contaminants such as heavy metals on every single batch produced. These supplements provide optimal doses and bioavailable forms of nutrients to support women before, during, and after pregnancy. I can honestly say I've never felt nauseous from taking these prenatals, and I also love their fish oil supplements. I feel great about all the research Ayla has done to create such incredible products. If you're in the market for any of these supplements, you can use my affiliate code WellnessForTheWin for 10% off your purchase. I'll leave a link for you in the show notes to check it out. So what about bottles for, I guess, specifically breastfed babies, because they're not necessarily always going to be getting those. When do you recommend introducing a bottle to breastfed babies to, I guess, you know, for people who are going to transition to work or just want to, you know, occasionally have a partner feed or, you know, things like that?
I would say right around 3 weeks is probably the ideal time to introduce a bottle. Really want to establish that good milk supply, good breastfeeding. And then around that third week, I think is usually a good time to introduce that bottle. And if a mom's going back to work or, you know, we're really going to need to use bottle feeding, then I think doing a bottle once a day to once every other day, just to continue to practice that is really important because I don't think there's anything more stressful than going back to work and having your baby not take a bottle.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of the timeline that we followed based on your recommendations was around the 3 week mark and continuing that exposure. And thankfully it went pretty smoothly for us. And yeah, it seemed like a good timeline too for us, like you said, to get the milk supply established, breastfeeding pretty well established, and having that balance is nice for moms to occasionally, you know, have a break and for, you know, the partner to bond or, you know, other caregivers or whoever's around. So those are good reminders as well. This is going to be a hard question because again, it depends on so many things, but someone asked, you know, what are some like must do's or, you know, things in general that we should absolutely be aware of as brand new moms that maybe people aren't thinking of?
I think this goes back to just giving yourself grace.
Yeah.
Again, I think that just being aware that there is so much pressure. And I think even for you guys now, than even when I was a new mom, the social media, the pressures, the things that pop up in our feed, the feeling of, oh my gosh, I've got to do this right and perfect. And it never looks like it does on Instagram, right?
Never is
that pretty. And so making sure that you're cutting yourself some slack, you're not always going to do it perfect. And that's A-okay, right? There's not a right way to do this. You can't screw it up. If you absolutely love your children to death, which all parents do, you can't mess it up.
Yeah.
And so I think it's cutting yourself some slack, giving yourself that grace, and realizing that we're not all going to be perfect. And it's not always going to be this pretty picture. And there are going to be moments, you know, I tell my patients all the time, I've had some pretty awful parenting moments. I've had some parenting moments I'm really not proud of.
Yeah.
And I'm a pediatrician. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. But, you know, right. There are definitely some things when my kids were you know, toddlers regarding their sleep and things like that, where, you know, I felt like I was failing as a parent. And so I think that realizing that we're never going to do everything completely right. I also think it's really important for moms to take some time for themselves and to not always put themselves last.
Yeah.
As new parents, and especially as you have a second or a third, we seem to fall further and further down the priority list. Mm-hmm. And I think as a new mom, you feel guilty taking any time for yourself. Yeah. And I would encourage moms, you know, if you're miserable, your kids are going to feel that. So you need to make sure you take some time for yourself, or you take that time out, or go on a walk with a friend, just to kind of make sure that you have some time for you.
Yeah. I'm very passionate about that, you know, encouraging women to continue to take care of themselves in every season. Cause yeah, it's hard. It's very hard when you're so stretched and, you know, you're taking care of all these other humans and creatures. You know, I have two dogs laying at my feet who also need me. And it's just, yeah, it's hard to remember to prioritize yourself. So I appreciate you calling that out and reminding all of us mamas to do that. Easier said than done sometimes.
Yeah. I would also say, I think one of the hardest parts about being a new mom is feeling so unsure of yourself, right? Like we second guess everything. And that's, you know, part of being a mom. Mm-hmm. And you second guess every decision you make pretty much their whole lives.
Forever. Yeah.
Forever, right? Like, yeah. Is this the right preschool? Should we put them in swimming lessons? Should we not put them in swimming lessons?
Right.
And so I think, you know, one of the hard parts, at least for me as a new parent, was being so unsure of myself. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage mamas to trust their instincts.
Yeah.
Right. If it feels wrong, if it feels off, you've got to do what's right for you and your family.
Yeah.
And just because your best friend or somebody else is telling you to do it doesn't mean it's right for you and your family. So I encourage, you know, new parents to trust their instincts and do what feels right for them and their family.
Yeah, 100%. I could not agree with that more. And I think as moms, we totally do have those gut instincts that are, you know, they're there for a reason. And so, yeah, really listening to those and letting that override anything you hear on Instagram or even, you know, my Instagram, my podcast, anything, you know, you're the expert of your own baby, and just try to trust that and trust yourself. And yeah, it's hard, but that's a good tip for sure. So a couple people asked about safety with newborns, which I think is a really good thing to just be aware of and remember, and just have little reminders of what we should be doing in terms of newborn safety. You know, are there any specific things that we need to have on our radar, or how we can, like, you know, have our house safe for baby to arrive? Any tips on that?
I would think that the biggest thing with newborn safety is having a safe sleep environment.
Yeah.
Having a bassinet, a pack and play, something that's, you know, next to your bed, close to you, but not necessarily in bed, co-sleeping. But I think the number one thing for a newborn would be a safe sleep environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I guess with that too, they're obviously typically in swaddles for a period of time. So yes. We would begin to, I'm trying to think of like the timeline of when they transition out of the swaddle, basically when they start to show signs of rolling, we would kind of want their arms out.
Yes, 100%. So when I swaddle babies, I like it to be kind of a thinner blanket, something that can't get bunched up close to over their nose and mouth, things like that. So not big, bulky, no extra blankets, things like that. Yeah, I generally recommend swaddling. It really depends on the kiddo. Most babies developmentally are going to lose their startle reflex around 4 months. And that's when, you know, they lose that kind of and so swaddling becomes less and less necessary the closer we get to that 4 month mark. But there are some babies. So if we're starting to see them, you know, really want to roll over, we want those arms free. So in the event they do roll over in their sleep, that they can push up with those arms and hands and move their head and neck around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, definitely good reminders. I'm, like I said, can't remember when that happened for us, but I know that was something that we had to navigate. And that's a tough transition too, is, you know, moving them from the swaddle to out of it. Cause they're oftentimes, I guess in our experience anyway, he was showing signs of rolling before that startle reflex was gone. So it's like having his arms out and startling himself and is a whole thing, but eventually they get over that and they sleep. Kind of on the same note with sleep, someone asked, you know, for mamas who are maybe stay at home moms and have multiple kiddos at home,
Someone asked about how to prioritize baby sleep during the day while also caring for a toddler. I'm sure that's really challenging for some families. So do you have any specific tips on kind of how to navigate that?
I think with newborns are great. They're going to pretty much conk out anytime.
Yeah, true.
No, I don't want moms to feel like they have to, you know, shush the toddler, keep it quiet. I would encourage them to go about their daily routine. I think one of the best ways to start to establish routine is trying to learn your baby's cues. Mm-hmm. Most newborns are going to sleep a lot of the day.
Yeah.
And so they're up to feed. They may have a wake window of anywhere between 10, 20 minutes. So if you start to notice a big yawn, if you start to notice, you know, swaddling up and putting your newborn down, go mm-hmm. get busy with the toddler, especially if they're not fuzzing. You'll be amazed just by putting them in their sleep environment or pack and play up in their crib in their room. You go get busy with your toddler. Oh, look, he fell asleep, mm-hmm. you know? And so I don't know that there's anything, you know, other than just kind of watching for their kind of cues that they're tired and putting them down. That can be really helpful with the second baby to try and, you know, get them to sleep, but still being able to give your toddler plenty of attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a good reminder that, yeah, newborns, thankfully, pretty much sleep no matter what. Like, you know, if it's loud, wherever you are, they typically just sleep on right through it, which is really nice. Yes. Definitely gets harder as they get older and more aware.
100%.
Yeah. And like you mentioned earlier, you know, around that 1 month mark is when they do become a little bit more wakeful and you're going to start getting a little bit more of that feedback and they'll have longer wake windows and things like that. So with that said, you know, at what point do you recommend beginning to, like you said, practice establishing a little bit of a routine with like naps and playtime and things like that? Is there, you know, around closer to 7 or 8 weeks or, you know, what does that typically look like?
Again, I think it's really dependent on the family, the child. Yeah. I like to talk about practicing putting babies down, self-soothing a little bit around the 1 month mark. And okay. Again, like I said, it is practice. Parents at that point are in the middle of the fussy period. Mm-hmm. You do whatever you can to get by.
Yeah.
Right.
Survival mode. Yeah.
But I do around 1 month, I do like to say, hey, let's try and get a consistent bedtime. Mm-hmm. Let's try and have bedtime be around within the same half an hour to an hour every night. That last feeding's 9, 10 o'clock. We're trying to put the baby down drowsy, but awake, because that's actually going to set the routine kind of for the whole next day. Mm-hmm. And so that I think is probably the best thing, is to start to try and say, hey, let's get a consistent last feeding of the day and trying to get a baby put down in the evening time.
Sure. Absolutely.
I would say probably around a month of age. And then going forward, I think one thing that's really frustrating for parents is that, you know, by 2 months, a lot of people out there, oh, are they napping well? Things like that. I would say baby good, consistent, long naps don't fall into place until even closer to 4 months. Mm-hmm. Even at 2 months, most babies are going to nap between almost every feeding. And yeah. You're going to get some 20-minute cat naps, which is frustrating because you're like, I'm just in the middle of getting something done. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get other longer naps.
Yeah.
But I would say that most babies don't have that good long morning nap, good long afternoon nap, kind of a power 45 minutes until closer to that 4 month mark.
Yeah.
You know, I think establishing that routine, hopefully by a month, we're on a every good 3 hour feeding schedule, feeding a little bit of wake time. And then most babies are going to sleep between almost every feeding at that point.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a good reminder to just like not have a lot of expectations in terms of the naps and the schedule, you know, quote unquote schedule and things. Cause yeah, it's just going to totally vary and not be consistent. And for people like me who are control freaks and type A people, we just have to like kind of let go of that and embrace that season. And like with that too, some people asked about contact naps, which I think is extremely normal for new babies. They, you know, they've been in your belly for 9 months. They want to continue to be on top of mama. So, you know, someone was asking like, how do I reduce contact naps? Obviously this person didn't give the baby's age. So that kind of depends a little bit, but they're like, the baby cries when I put him down and he just wants to sleep on me. And again, I want to say, I think that's very normal, but what are your thoughts on, on that?
It's 100% very normal.
Yeah.
Again, depending on baby's age, like I said, at 1 month, if you know that, you know, you're just exhausted and babies are fussy. And if you put them on your chest, you guys are both going to get an hour long nap. By all means, do it. Right.
Yeah, right.
But like, what I like to talk about is that practice putting them down, mm-hmm. right? Trying to catch them before they're overtired. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons, especially early on, babies are so fussy by late afternoon, evening time, is that they're overstimulated mm-hmm. and overtired. And sometimes the more we rock, the more we bounce, the more we hold, the worse it can get.
Yeah.
So sometimes just trying to recognize, hey, you've been up for a little bit. I'm going to try and go lay you down and go get busy doing something else. Mm-hmm. And see, gosh, unless your baby's screaming bloody murder, I'm going to let you work it out for a few minutes and see what happens. And again, that's very parent dependent. That's their comfort level. Mm-hmm. When you have a new baby, 5 minutes of crying seems like an eternity.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
But I can tell you that, you know, 5 minutes of crying, if I'm crying because I'm tired and I'm trying to put myself to sleep, probably isn't the end of the world. But mm-hmm. again, you know, mom has to use her instincts and things like that. But I do encourage moms to, and again, I say practice because it's not always going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, you notice your baby's tired cues, swallow them up and put them down. Give them a few minutes, see if they can work it out before you necessarily pick them back up. Mm-hmm. Or if when you put them down, they start to fuss, maybe put a hand on their chest.
Yeah.
Maybe just kind of shush and soothe without actually holding mm-hmm. and work your way into being able to lay them down to get a little bit of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that was helpful for us. It's just kind of like rubbing his belly and, you know, letting him know we're here, you know, we're next to you, but we're maybe not holding you. And cause yeah, sometimes you do just need a break. You need to not have something on you. And whether it's, you know, for mom to just like go have a bathroom break or whatever it may be. There's a lot of reasons why you need to sometimes set them down. And I think that's a good reminder. And, but yes, like you said, it does feel like an absolute lifetime when they're crying even longer than a minute, especially when it's your first probably. But we did find that oftentimes he would end up falling asleep. But yes, it's definitely a tough balance, and figuring out what feels good for you is so important. And that kind of brings me to sleep training, which is of course a highly controversial topic, and everyone has a lot of different thoughts on that. And again, I think the most important thing is just listening to your mom gut and doing what you feel is appropriate for you and your own baby. But I know a lot of people talk about, you know, cry it out and different methods and things like that. So, you know, like you said, giving them the opportunity to self-soothe is probably helpful to a certain extent. But any thoughts on, you know, sleep training or, you know, any of that kind of stuff?
So I think the first thing to say is that sleep training encompasses a lot of different things, right? It means different things to different people.
Yeah.
Sleep training can be establishing a nighttime routine, right? A bedtime routine. That actually is shown in studies to be pretty much universally helpful, is to establishing a routine.
Absolutely.
To something we call graduated extinction, where you let them cry a little bit longer periods at a time, to cry it out, which is shutting the door, saying goodbye, you know?
Yeah.
Those kind of, and again, I do think every parent has to do what feels best and right for them, right? Letting a baby cry for a little bit can help, in my opinion, again, I'm going to say in my opinion, can help babies learn to soothe themselves, but it's not for every parent. It's
right.
And it's not an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. I always tell moms when I'm talking to them about it in a room, it's super easy for me to sit here and say it. I'm not the one that has to go home and do it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
But I do think that helping babies, and again, that goes back to that practice, trying to catch them before they're overtired, mm-hmm. you know, letting them do it a little bit more early on can really help them learn to self-soothe as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's really family and baby dependent. I think personality of the baby plays a large role in this too, right?
Totally. You
can have a really easygoing baby and these things work really well. You can have a really high strung baby that, you know, it's not as easy. It's a lot harder when a baby goes from 0 to 100 and stays at 100 for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
To say, oh my gosh, let him cry. Right.
Yeah. Right.
I know as a parent, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And so I think it really depends on the situation and trusting your gut, mm-hmm. And doing what, you feel is best for your family.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it totally depends on the person and the situation. And, you know, parents also have to take their mental health into consideration. Cause I think, you know, again, when we're sleep deprived and we're overwhelmed, there's a lot going on. Sometimes it is survival mode. And again, we do just need 5 or 10 minutes to ourselves, even if that means baby's crying. And so that's not, you know, neither of us are saying, yeah, just do cry it out. But we have to know that it depends on a lot of things.
I think letting a baby cry for even early on for 5 or 10 minutes isn't detrimental.
Yeah.
And again, like I do think that in my experience, my moms that have practiced helping their babies self-soothe, helping them learn to self-soothe, letting them fuss a little bit, not picking them up the instant that they start to fuss and cry, have shown it does improve overall their mental health just because they are getting a little bit of a break. They mm-hmm. are seeing some success in sleeping longer stretches. And so I do think that that can help overall because it certainly can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a baby who cries and won't ever let you put them down.
Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned too, just hopefully doing your best to set yourself up for success by having that consistent bedtime routine at least and following their cues as much as possible throughout the day to avoid that overtired phenomenon that those can both hopefully help quite a bit as well. And, you know, speaking of soothing, as you know, Rhett is a pacifier baby. He loves his Binky. You know, he was a big Binky baby when he was tiny too. So any thoughts on, you know, is there any reason to avoid pacifiers in the early days? Do you typically recommend using pacifiers for little babies? And then I guess after that, we can kind of get to some questions on weaning your toddler off of the Binky.
I use pacifiers from a very young age with my own children. Mm-hmm. I did not see that it disrupted breastfeeding for me.
Yeah.
So lactation is probably not going to be happy with me saying this, but I think that pacifiers sometimes prevent moms from becoming human pacifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use them pretty regularly with my own kids. I think that it's probably a little bit different story if we're really having trouble establishing a good latch, establishing a good breast milk supply. We're struggling with weight gain and things like that. Then I think the worry is by pacifying a baby, are we missing opportunities to provide nutrition and sure. feed them?
Right.
And so I think that, again, different scenarios would warrant different answers, mm-hmm. different pathways with a pacifier. But if we've got a baby that is nursing well, we've established milk, they're growing, they're thriving, I don't see any harm in pacifier use from a young age.
Totally agree. Yeah. Thankfully, it didn't impact our breastfeeding journey either. And it was a lifesaver a lot of times, like, you know, car rides and just different times where, you know, that they can soothe with a pacifier. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse because then that brings me to the toddler years when they don't want to give up the pacifier. So, you know, a lot of people are in our same shoes where, you know, it's kind of time to start thinking about at least weaning, you know, from the pacifier. Thankfully, Rhett only uses it for sleep at this point, but do you have any like favorite methods or tips for weaning toddlers off of the pacifier when that time comes?
The one thing right around one is when I generally recommend that babies use pacifiers for sleep only.
Mm-hmm.
So at my house, when my kiddos turned one, we would throw the pacifier back in the bed. And when one of the reasons I really like to encourage that is we're really in a big phase of language development at that point in time, right? After one are really working on their receptive language. And as they head to 15 to 18 months, more of their expressive language where they're going to start to have more words. And I don't like when kids have pacifiers and they start to talk around them by mm-hmm. holding them in their mouth or they don't talk because they have a pacifier in their mouth. So I really mm-hmm. encourage parents around one and definitely by 15 months to have that pacifier not be used during the daytime anymore and more for nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Times of duress, like coming to see me, fine to have a pacifier.
Yeah.
15 months are not thrilled to be in the office. So I think that that's fine. And then I do recommend between 2.5 to 3 years getting rid of that pacifier. Mm-hmm. It is usually way more stressful on the parent than it is on the child.
For sure.
We all dread it. We're like, oh my gosh, they sleep so well. I don't want to get rid of this. I'm going to be up all night. It's going to be awful. My experience is most parents, they do it and they're like, Oh my gosh, that was so, like, he didn't even seem to care.
Yeah, yeah.
With my kiddos, we had the passy fairy come. Uh-huh. We gathered up all of our passies and we left them out for the passy fairy, a lot like the tooth fairy. Mm-hmm. And the passy fairy took all those binkies to the new babies being born and left a present, and then they were just gone. I think we had maybe one rough night of going to bed, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And they transitioned really pretty well.
Yeah.
I will tell you, the earlier you get rid of it, the easier it is. Mm-hmm. I never did this, but I do have some parents that say, okay, at one, we're going to get rid of it. And then their kids don't ever use a pacifier in their toddler years, because I feel like in their toddler years is where they really get attached to it.
Yes, for sure.
So I would say, if you really want to make it easy, getting rid of it
sooner, you know, rather than later. Sooner, yeah.
Rather than later is certainly easier, but they seem to do fine with it when they're kind of 2.5, 3 too.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. That's what I've heard, is a lot of people are like, we work it up so much. I think that's the case for so many things with kids, is like, we dread huge transitions and they usually are so resilient and do great. And like, it's way harder on us as the parents. So we just like build these things up in our minds and they're like, you're like, wow, that was no big deal at all. So yeah, I think that's probably definitely the case for the whole binky thing as well. So we just need to tackle it and do it and get it done. But I appreciate your perspective on that. Okay, I'm chiming in here really fast with a quick binky update because Dr. Hartman inspired me to just give it a shot. So shortly after this interview, we cut the binky out, and she was totally right. It was way less of a big deal than we built it up to be in our heads, per usual. So I kind of used her binky fairy idea, but I really didn't like go to great lengths or have him even be involved in that process. We had been kind of mentioning it to him a couple times before taking it away. So we kind of had that thought in his mind, I think, that pretty soon we're going to say bye-bye to binkies. And the night we decided to have him sleep without it, I just told him, the binky, because he was like before bed, he's like, bink, bink. And, you know, that's what he called it. And I told him, the binky fairy came and gave your binkies to little babies who need them because you're a big boy now. And at first he looked at me like, what? You're crazy. And then he was like, okay, in a really sweet and kind of sad voice, and looked at me like, this is interesting. But I also gave him a new water bottle that day that had sharks on it that he thought was pretty cool. I don't know if that helped ease the blow at all or like give him a distraction, but I definitely don't think it hurt. So he literally asked for his binky maybe once or twice after the fact. And even a few weeks after we took it away, he had a really bad double ear infection. We had a couple of rough nights because of that, and still made it through without him even asking for a binky. So truly, it was a very quick and easy transition. So for all the fellow mamas out there who have been putting off taking away the binky, if you feel like it's time, just know that your child will probably do great and you don't have to do anything extravagant to make it happen. So just wanted to say that. So back to the interview. Gosh, we're almost through all of the questions, but one thing I did want to touch on briefly, for especially for brand new parents who maybe aren't aware of this, and I know this is something that you touch on in pediatrician visits, but any specific supplements that babies need, I think the main one is that's recommended is vitamin D drops for all babies, or if they're on formula, maybe is it typically fortified with vitamin D?
Yes. So okay. We do recommend vitamin D drops. It's 1 mL once daily for breastfed babies. Mm-hmm. If a mom is supplementing or doing both, if a baby is getting over 50% formula, I generally recommend that they no longer need to do vitamin D supplementation.
Gotcha. Okay. And then someone asked about, of course, again, the baby industry these days makes you feel like you need all the things. So there's supplements out there these days for things like immunity and gas and all kinds of stuff. Do you typically see that those things are recommended or necessary, especially with gas? I think that's a very common one that people talk about, you know, all these different supplements for gas. Any thoughts on specific things that are needed in that case or other maybe interventions that would be more effective or safer, things like that?
So one of the reasons that babies are really gassy, and almost every baby is really gassy, mm-hmm. is their digestive system is just immature. Mm-hmm. You and I have thousands of different cultures and bacteria that help establish our gut flora, and babies get some of that by coming through the birth canal, and they have to establish it over time. Mm-hmm. And so I would say pretty much every 1 month old, 3 weeks to 6 weeks is really where they're the peak of that gassy. They're trying to establish that good gut flora and all of those kind of things. And so I don't think that simethicone or the Mylocon drops can hurt. They give mom something to do. They're not harmful to babies. And so I think that those things, I think as moms, make us feel better that we're helping the problem to some degree.
Placebo effect, maybe.
Yeah. And I don't think that they're harmful. Same thing with gripe water, things like that. If mom feels like it's helping and it's working, it's making her baby more comfortable, I don't see any reason not to use those things.
Sure.
Sometimes we will recommend, you know, trying a probiotic just to see if it helps your baby establish some good flora. Again, I would say realistically, time is ultimately what makes babies less gassy.
Yeah.
And it's just once they establish good digestive health, their systems are less immature. Gas and all of that gets better. And very rarely do I ever see it a big problem past about the 3 month mark.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I think that's helpful to know. And just, you know, again, making sure everyone knows you don't need to stock up on millions of supplements for your baby and be giving them all these things.
100%. The human body is pretty darn amazing. The fact that we can build an entire human being and provide all of its nutrition for a year is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And you don't need a lot of extra stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Well, to close us out, some people were wondering, what are some of like your favorite resources for parents, especially new first-time parents, to learn accurate information? I will say, as someone who's having their second, that going to your pediatrician and calling them with any questions is typically better than Dr. Google or Instagram, where you're going to hear all kinds of things. But are there any specific resources that you personally like for people to kind of refer to when they do have questions or concerns?
Sure. I mean, obviously, again, I love your answer. Coming to your pediatrician, asking for their advice, especially if you're really struggling with something, is probably the best way to get good, accurate information. There is a website called healthykids.org. It is put on by the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it touches on everything from illness to behavior. And so I think that there are a lot of resources there for illness. Again, our website at my office, and I think lots of other pediatricians in town, have something on our website called Is Your Child Sick? It uses Barton and Schmidt, which is kind of the universal triage for pediatrics, to help parents decide, what are some things I can do at home? When do I need to take my child to be seen? Mm-hmm. So those are some good, reliable resources that are available out there.
Awesome. Yes. And I can link those in the show notes for you guys too. So you can refer to those if you want. And like you mentioned, you know, if people aren't local or go somewhere else, then they can kind of refer to their own pediatrician as well. But that's just good to have a couple to refer to, you know, maybe in the middle of the night when we're, when we need a quick answer or something. That's good to know. So I think we covered some really good ground and, you know, touched on a lot of the big, big questions that we have, again, whether it's first time baby, second baby, all the things. It was honestly, again, selfishly, some really good refreshers for me to think about with newborn coming. And I loved your tips on how to prepare the toddler and making sure the toddler still feels like they have so much love and attention, and giving them kind of that helper role and saying, you know, introduce me to baby and things like that. Those are all very good things to keep in mind as we navigate this huge transition for both ourselves and our toddler.
100%. Toddler's behavior is driven by attention, good or bad. And so if we can remember to shower them with the attention for the behavior we like, you're going to get more of it. And giving them lots of attention in this transition is really key.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and your expertise today. It was so appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
Can you say wellness?
Wellness.
Can you say for the win?
For the win.
Can you say thanks for listening?
For listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Good job, baby.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and took away some tips or wisdom that you can apply to boost your health and happiness starting today. If you did, I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review to help other women like you find my show and get inspired to start living a life they love. Also, take a quick screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me at Wellness for the Win so I can see why you love today's show. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next time.